This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
People just started running. They started pushing us out the back door into the alley out the back because they didn't want us coming out the front because they didn't know where the shooter was or how many there was.
You've seen them all running, like looking down how Newcomb's stairs are, looking down. You can see everything that's down there, and you just seen people running every way that they could.
Anger, disbelief, and a whole bunch of other emotions describe what people are feeling in these back-to-back shooting massacres that really shake us to the core in so many cases. This has been the conversation. Hi, everybody. Kate Delaney. I say this show is about being the voice of reason and the place where you can let your opinions be heard. And many of you have jammed my mailbox over this. This is certainly the conversation that's happening in all kinds of backyards, even if it's for a handful of minutes or a little bit longer than that. And speaking of minutes, isn't it interesting? It only takes a minute to kill 9 people in a attack where you have targets right in front of you. And that's exactly what happened in Dayton. In El Paso, the gunman had more time, so he killed 20 people and injured dozens of others. And that's the other part of this. There's lots of people who are injured, who are in the hospital, who are recovering from gunshot wounds. They were lucky only in the sense that they escaped with their lives. But they have recovery times and various injuries and broken bones and gunshot wounds, a variety of problems related to being in the middle of the shooting. And just think, last week we had Gilroy, and there was a woman who was at the Gilroy Garlic Festival that's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And I mentioned last week I used to live in California, and I thought it was cool. I went to the Gilroy Garlic Festival at least twice just because it was so unique. And I grew up on the East Coast and live in other places, and here I was, wow. You know, I'm in wine country, and look at all these crops and the farms, and got to know all kinds of different people. And Gilroy is one of those areas where it's a mixed bag. You have all kinds of things that they're growing, but they're really known for garlic. So that festival just got bigger and bigger. And people are there, and suddenly some are no longer on the planet because of that shooting. And there was a woman who happened to be at Gilroy who was also in Vegas when the mass shooting happened in Vegas, when they were sitting ducks at that concert. And you start to think, wow, I mean, what are the odds of that? Imagine what she thinks. This is can't be happening again. And the odds of that. But now the odds of things like that, wrong place at the wrong time, shoot up dramatically by the amounts of incidences that we're seeing. And it could be in a nightclub. It could be in a bar where they're singing karaoke. We saw that on the West Coast. It could be on a Saturday night in Dayton, Ohio, when you're hanging out with your family, you're just trying to have fun, get some grub, and you're running for ice cream. Could be when you're going for school supplies to the local Walmart. It is scary. Now there's no question. It's not just kids in schools that have to practice drills and have to be alert. I don't think we live our lives in a paranoid state where we can't enjoy our life. But we have to be as vigilant as we can about where we are, what our surroundings are, all of that. What I think in a Walmart when I'm shopping, that I'm going to look around, wheel around, when I'm picking up my Cheetos, grabbing some last-minute school supplies, that I'm going to wheel around with the kids and I'm going to see a gun in my face. No, I'm not thinking that. I may think that at a concert. I might think that at a festival now, but I still wouldn't think that in that situation. At this point, there are some people that are thanking God they're alive. And then others who still are trying to grapple with the sense that they got to bury somebody. Life is precious. I journal every day. You know what I write? I write what I'm grateful for. And I'm not kidding you. What I write every single day of my life since I've been 18. I write life. I'm grateful for life because there's another day. There's another cool experience. There's more listeners I get to talk to. There's more emails that unfold. There's more people that I get to touch when I speak. There's more adventures I get to go on. There's more interesting people I get to interview. There's more time to spend with my family where I can rib them about what lousy game players they are. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. I love life. I bet you do too, no matter what kind of life you have. And to have it snatched away like that because I go to get something to eat is in the United States of America isn't shocking anymore. It's just plain sad and sick. And what do we find out again? One of them is bullied. One of them is a white nationalist, hates everybody, rallies around all these sick websites that are spewing hate that really have nothing to do with a kid that grew up privileged, but oh well, with parents that loved him and advantages, but eh, I guess I'll fall into this group on the internet because I have nothing else to do. Wow. So what are the details of this? Do you even really want to know the details? Oh. How about the details of the victims, of who they were, and that they happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time? How about the fact that you have the Dayton shooter who killed his sister? He wasn't even 25 years old. And those parents don't know what to say to people because they're just stunned by it. They don't know what to say. And you know that in this 24-hour period, what we've seen, you know, we've had 251 mass shootings in 216 days in the U.S. That's the statistic everybody's talking about. Different amounts of people who have died, different circumstances. But that is a sad statistic for this great country to have to say that. I mean, we're not naive that there wouldn't be killings. There wouldn't be horrible, twisted people that would do awful things. Of course not. In Dayton, 9 people died. The shooter had just 1 minute because they were patrolling and they were able to get him, nail him, so to speak, right away. Thank goodness. Because how many lives were saved by those quick thinking police officers who were immediately there and immediately responded. And then the question becomes why. The shooter wore body armor, had extra magazines, 1 o'clock in the morning. Why did he do that? What made him decide to go there and open fire the way he did? The victims, of the 9 victims, the youngest 22, the oldest 57. Stay with us, more to come.
The Genesis Communications Network is one of America's premier broadcasters of captivating talk radio. We thank you for listening. Now, just imagine, there are thousands of people who are just as passionate about radio as you are. But what you may not realize is how easy and affordable it is to advertise with us. Radio commercials for your business could be heard on hundreds of radio stations across the U.S. every day. We can help you by creating an effective radio advertising campaign for your company. From script writing to producing your commercials,
special.
Just like the one you're listening to right now.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do.
When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com. And an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Shot at in Mexico, 100 drinks at a well-worn bar with some shady-looking characters in Vegas, riding a bike from Dallas to Seattle on a bet, scribbling the words dungeon on a napkin while two passengers next to you on a plane wonder, what the heck does that mean? I'm Kate Delaney, and what does this have to do with my success, and why do you care? It's part of my journey that I want to share with you in my new book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Luckily now I can laugh at some of what seemed like utter disasters at the time. Can any of you relate? That's exactly what you'll discover by reading my book. I picture you on a boat, beach, or relaxing in the backyard, laughing out loud until you rupture your spleen. Well, hopefully not. While pulling out some seriously rare and secret stuff. Doesn't matter what you do or where you are right now, anyone in any walk of life can use what I learned in my years of crisscrossing around the United States pursuing my dreams. So what do you want to get out of life? Happiness? Contentment? Why are you here? Pick up my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, at Amazon.com.
There were some victims in the parking lot. The majority were inside the facility. I don't know as far as how vast inside. That's still to be worked on, but I do know the majority of victims are inside of the store.
All right, so that was Robert Gamez. Of course, he is the sergeant in El Paso with the police department there, talking about the people and their locations, because immediately what everyone wants to know when there is a shooting is, where were they? Were they in a store? Were they outside? What happened? And he made his way around the store. What's really sad is the other side, in looking at the El Paso shooter, the grandparents of the man who allegedly slaughtered 20 people inside this El Paso Walmart said they're devastated. Larry Brown and Cynthia Brown had to release a statement about the shooting. Their grandson, this 21-year-old Patrick Cruces, is being treated as a domestic terrorist. They say, "We are devastated at the events of El Paso. We pray for the victims of this tragedy. He is our grandson. He lived with them in their house in Allen, Texas. He was going to Collin County College." They said he moved out of the house 6 weeks ago, spent a couple of nights there while they were out of town, and that they never saw anything like this. And the grandparents said that his driver's license and mailing address were there at their home, which that sent all kinds of law enforcement to their house when they have no idea what's going on because of what the address was. And, you know, you see these pictures that have been released of him. And, of course, when he went into the when he went into the Walmart, it was a different situation. He had that dead-eyed look in his face, much like the 24-year-old who went to that popular nightlife district on Sunday at 1 o'clock in the morning and had body armor on and shot 9 people and then injured so many others. Luckily, they got to him quickly, so they were able to gun him down, but not before some people lost their lives. And he was armed and ready to just keep on going. He had lots and lots of ammunition. And boy, oh boy, the pictures of him, the picture that emerges of the kind of kid he was described as by a lot of people. Now, you did have somebody who went to school with him who said he was bullied and that he had a hit list. But for the most part, both of them also had plenty of people that said, no, they were just like any other regular guy, that you wouldn't have said, oh, something's not right there. Something's not right. So what do we do? How do we move forward with this? And that's going to be part of what we talk about throughout the week. And by the way, don't be shy. You can always dive on the digits during the week at 855-266-2283, 855-266-2283, or send me an email, and that's katedelaneyradio.com. But what do we do with this rise of domestic terror threats? What's the strategy to deal with this problem? Because so much of what we look at, of course, is international. The FBI has said it before. We've talked to ex-FBI people on this show who say they think it's scary, the lone wolf terrorist, and that the rise in the number of white supremacist domestic terrorism cases has been very scary. Homeland Security, they sponsored a study this year. They found that there are major gaps in national terrorism prevention efforts. They say why? Because there's not a lot of investment there, and there's not a lot of focus in that direction. DHS funding for efforts aimed at countering violent extremism were pretty low compared to some other Western democracies. I think that's going to change. The U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Texas, John Bash, said the Justice Department is treating the El Paso shooting that took the lives of at least 20 people over the weekend as a domestic terror case, like I mentioned. So this is something that now is at the forefront. But the U.S. doesn't have a domestic terrorism law, and no government agency designates domestic groups as being terrorist organizations. So FBI calls domestic terror-related cases, and they end up with a lot of different charges for violations of laws related to guns or even other state charges. I was just reading a story. In fact, I took that from the story that I just read. And I knew that it was somewhere in between there because I thought about that church that I went by in Charleston and the site of the extremist shooting there in 2015. And then, of course, the synagogue in Pittsburgh. So then they face hate crimes and murder charges. So domestic terrorists get tried for criminal acts, not beliefs or associations. The FBI opens cases on criminal violations. I'll say it again, not ideologists. Unless a mass shooter in the U.S. is known to be linked to an international terrorist group, then it's different. Killing random civilians to spread a political message is terrorism, is what they say. The FBI classifies it as domestic terrorism, but and many of the killers are lone wolf losers, that they are just connected to hate through the internet. And guess what that's like? Islamic terrorists who have the thrill of the kill and whatever it is they're doing and post their rambling rhetoric on the internet. Wow. You think of the congressman in Louisiana, the Republican, who was the victim of the mass shooting a couple years ago. And he talks about the internet and he talks about mental health, too. And thinks clearly they should be classified as domestic terrorism. And he said he was glad that the in El Paso, they're treating it that way. This culture, as Scalise calls it, the congressman, of death in America is frightening, glorifying it, making it seem like it's normal. And the men who are being radicalized, wherever they are, on these forums, on these other sites, all over the internet, wow, that has to end. It does have to end, but how do you make that end? So I think we're going to see some laws perhaps change. Congress can change the laws surrounding domestic terrorism. And I think there'll be a push for that to happen. And really, that's going to be probably bipartisan. I can't imagine there may be arguments about specifics of it, but I can't imagine there'll be a lot of arguments about it. I can't imagine that. Because what can be done is the question. What can be done? What do we do moving forward as a nation? What can we do? Partnerships, more research, more shared responsibility between law enforcement and the FBI, and looking into it more clearly, creating that picture, looking at these sites which pop up constantly, but finding them, getting to them, if possible, shutting them down. I'm for free speech, but at some point, when it's radicalized hate vitriol, there would be a line somewhere that would be crossed. Wow. It really is time to change the situation. It really is time to have that conversation. We should be able to feel reasonably safe when we're at church, school, work, out eating in a restaurant with our family and friends. It's like a minefield. And where is the next bomb going to go off, which is one of these lone wolf domestic terrorist guys? When are they going to be popping up with a manifesto that they post on the internet next? And where do they end up being caught on camera with body armor and some kind of an assault weapon? Terrible. Because I had so many requests for this. The story of Father Vu and his journey to come to the United States and how much the U.S. means to him and what it was like to be in Vietnam is coming up next on the show. Thanks for listening.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live underground gopher. You need survivalist camps, the ultimate fully functional off-the-grid mobile survival bug out house that's well equipped and custom built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family survival to survivalistcamps.com.
If you talk to me, we'll hear you.
Why are we getting killed like this?
Kyle's not here. Got caught drinking beer in the park a couple of nights ago.
Really?
Yeah. Zero tolerance. He's out for the season.
Harsh.
Hey, he knew not to drink. We've made that clear to all of our kids, right?
No, not really.
Bill, if we don't tell them what we expect and why they shouldn't drink, how are they going to know?
Talk. They hear you.
Hear you. You can do it if you try.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
With two mass shootings in crowded public places in Texas and Ohio claiming at least 29 lives in less than 24 hours and leaving scores of people wounded, it's a shocking carnage even in a country accustomed to gun violence. On NBC's Meet the Press this morning, Democratic candidate Cory Booker blames the current administration.
We have a president of the United States who is particularly responsible. I, in my faith, have this idea that you reap what you sow, and he is sowing seeds of hatred in our country, and this harvest of hate violence that we're seeing right now lies at his feet.
In the Texas border city of El Paso, a gunman opened fire yesterday morning in a shopping area packed with thousands of people during the busy back-to-school season, killing 20 and wounding more than two dozen. Hours later in Dayton, Ohio, a gunman wearing body armor opened fire in a popular nightclub area, killing 9 and injuring 26. This is USA Radio News.
Got an old car? You can donate it, whether it's running or not, to the United Breast Cancer Foundation and save a life. They'll even come and pick it up for free. The United Breast Cancer Foundation has saved hundreds of women's lives through their free or low-cost breast screen exams, but now they need your help. The United Breast Cancer Foundation wants to save more lives through early detection by offering women free or low-cost breast screening exams. And donating your old car, SUV, or truck, whether it's running or not, helps pay for them. Plus, you get a charitable tax deduction. Help the United Breast Cancer Foundation save lives by donating your old car, SUV, or truck. Call now for free pickup. 800-280-2144. 800-280-2144. 800-280-2144. Call right now. That number again is 800-280-2144.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Having a conversation with Father Peter Vu off the air was such a treat for me, and the various things that we were able to discuss before we actually now have sat down to do this interview that all of you are listening to. What an interesting man, and what an interesting road he's taken to his vocation, and what a treat to have him on the show. And he's written a book called Living for a Higher Purpose, Story of a City Boy Who Survived the Vietnam War by Living for Jesus and Others. And this is certainly inspirational, and it's a memoir, and there's a lot of history here. So, Father Vu, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Kate. Let me send you and our listeners the native greeting from the people of Vietnam. Good morning, Vietnam, in the voice of Robin Williams. And the weather today is hot and humid, tomorrow hot and humid, and basically the same for the rest of the week.
Bravo, well done. You have a sense of humor. I love that sense of humor. And I'm sure that sense of humor helped you get through some really, really tough times. Take us back, because you talk about the history of what it was like, because you were there as a young boy in Vietnam. What was it like for you in Vietnam, what you saw, and how you escaped that?
Well, Kate and audience, I was 5 years old when the war ended. You know, everything was exploding around me, but like anything, my parents was able to keep me from all that. We didn't watch a lot of that on the news, and I didn't know the war ended until the last day. And, you know, everything, my house is about 5-10 minutes bicycle ride from Tan Son Nhat Airport. And I saw you know, airplanes, you know, running into the buildings and everything else, tanks all over the road, soldiers, you know, running naked and, you know, a lot of carnage on the street. I thought that was the last day that being described in the book of Revelation. And, of course, after that, you know, the horrific, you know, life under the communist system. And my dad was taken to the concentration camp when I was 5 years old, and I had to find out where they took him and go to visit him, and then I did not see him. And by the miracle, he was released when I was in high school, senior year. So life after the war was very tough, say the least. And I had to grow up fast, and, you know, everything there under the communist is something that regular people don't know how it was like. I myself basically tried to be the man of the home for my mom. And I remember when she and I went to visit my dad, it took us quite a few times to track down where he was and to bring food and to see him. And I basically had to go get all the basic necessities, you know, for the family, you know, from going to the well to get water, to get all the rice and basic necessity for the family. I remember the, you know, when the rice ran out, mostly in the book of Prophet Isaiah, you know, when the poor widow and the son did not have anything left. I thought that was, you know, the last day. But like in the Bible, I saw that miracles happen with the rice being filled up in my house because the communist was able to open up, you know, the right distribution a little early. And so I went through all that. And of course, I don't know if you and the listener remember, this is the late 80s. So the Khmer Rouge was in Cambodia, killed a lot of people. And China was amassing a lot of troops on the north border of Vietnam. So I and all my friends, you know, was drafted when we were only in 10th grade. To learn how all about weapons and how to take up arms and all that. So that was quite an experience in itself. And of course, you know, I myself, you know, had to make a decision whether to stay in Vietnam or to leave and follow my God calling, my own vocation.
And for you to leave Vietnam, what was it like to leave Vietnam? How did you make that decision? And you see, now we see immigration and the crisis we're having at the border. Does that bring back memories for you? We see what's happening in South Florida with Cubans that were trying to escape and were on boats, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that was a tough decision, Kate. I myself, I was only 16 when I had to make that decision. Leaving everything behind was difficult because I grew up with, you know, my most Asian families are very quite, you know, connected. And we live together for 3 or 4 generations in the same household. So leaving everything, family and friends, was difficult. And heading for the unknown was difficult too. I don't know what happened, you know, about America. I just know it's a wonderful land, just like God's people in the Bible. I mean, they're trying to look for the promised land, but they don't know what's there. And I myself had to discern that. And, you know, if I stay, I would have to, you know, I would have to go to Cambodia to fight the Khmer Rouge, or go up north to fight China. My dad worked for the South Vietnam, so I could not, go to college, because they don't want, you know, people who work for the former regime, you know, the children, grandchildren to succeed because they might turn against the communists. So I didn't have any choice, Kate. So I had to, make that decision to go out into the unknown, and almost like the darkness of the soul. I did not succeed. You know, I had to try 3-4 times. And in the book, I describe how those failed times I had to go through. And one time I was captured. Other time I was able to escape. So when I was captured, they put me in, you know, in prison, almost like the political prisoners. even though we ourselves, we just try to sneak out. And, you know, enduring all the interrogations and house living, which I didn't have to deal with that before. It was quite eye-opening. And then, of course, the last time I tried with persistence, I was able to succeed, and that was quite a trip in itself. Remind me a lot of the trip out Egypt for God's people. I live in Saigon, so I had to sneak out at night, go to some area close to the river, and, you know, these contact will take me to from one small boat to the next boat, and finally, you know, if everything goes well, then we would end up in the big boat. And in order for me to have that those trip, my family had to pay and you know the price for that, and you know, it could go up to in you know to $2,000. And the last trip, I myself was put in this boat, and it was a harrowing experience in itself, Kate. We thought we would get caught because I could hear the you know the Coast Guard people ask, you know, what's underneath the ship, and the captain basically said, you know, only fish, and somehow you know by miracle they let us, they believed that, so they did not search. And so the next thing we know that we went through that, and why that whole thing, the search was happening. You know, little kids also cry. And we thought the cover would be blown and we would get captured. And somehow, you know, through that dark night, I look up in the sky, I could only see the stars and and nothing else. And the next morning, you know, we found out that we were in the international water. So the captain let us, you know, go up to the, you know, to the deck and get some, you know, some fresh air. Of course, you know, we were not fishermen, so, you know, the sea was make us seasick. And then, and of course, tar from the boat make us get sick. We did not have food or water. They gave us just enough water to last. Our boat was floating at sea for 7 days, almost over a week before we get rescued. So during that time, we ran into a big storm, Kate, and that storm was biggest storm I ever seen. Later I came over here and saw the movie, you know, The Perfect Storm, and tears rolling down my eyes because that was, you know, a similar storm that I went through. I thought that night we would never make it. We prayed for rain, and the next thing we know that we got a big storm. The storm basically, you know, the wave was like about over 20 feet high, and it cracked, you know, the front of the boat, and we thought the boat would get torn apart.
Wow.
So we survived the storm. Yeah, we survived the storm. And, you know, just like they say, be careful what you pray for, you might get it. So we had the water. So the water went inside the boat. And the boat itself is a dinky little boat. Had about 70, 80 people.
Wow, 70, 80 people. Father Vu, can you stay with us for another segment and continue this story?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Dahibo IoT Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, the Hebo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. Dehebo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's DrinkSuperTea.com, 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
When you have a pain in the neck, a real pain in the neck, back, shoulder, or legs, you now have two convenient choices to get fast relief without taking another pill. Because now, Sunny Bay Heating Wraps and Pillows are available at both Amazon and Walmart. Yes, see Sunny Bay's 4.5 to 5-star customer reviews on Amazon.com or Walmart.com. Our microwavable heat wraps, heatable neck pillows, and extra large body wraps are designed better for perfect support where and when you need it. Even while driving, Sunny Bay wraps will not burn and stay balanced to provide soothing hot or cold therapy to help treat temporary or chronic pain. And the best part, Sunny Bay quality products start at under $20. Join thousands of happy customers and see why Sunny Bay products have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy. It's easy. Click Amazon or Walmart and search today for Sunny Bay.
Fellow Patriots, my name is Todd Savage, founder of BlackRifleRealEstate.com. Like you, I was a prisoner of the alt-left sanctuary state until one day I chose to lead my family to freedom. Today we live on a sustainable 20-acre homestead where we shoot, hunt, garden, and homeschool our children without the tyranny of the nanny state looking over us. If you're ready to flee the city to the freedom of Idaho or Montana, our Black Rifle Real Estate team is here to help. Go to BlackRifleRealEstate.com. That's BlackRifleRealEstate.com.
He's talking about what it was like on that boat and how harrowing it was, and comparing it to the movie The Perfect Storm when he saw that, what it felt like. So take us back to that moment. You were talking about how small the boat was, Father, that people didn't, I think people don't always realize that.
Yeah, so this boat here, they said that it would be able to travel at sea. Basically, that means that the, you know, the head of the boat, you know, would be able to break the right over the waves. But it was dinky little boat because we had to sit knee to knee from one side to the other side. And there was, you know, over 70 of us in there. Women, children, men, and kids and all that. So, we ourselves, with that storm, the boat took in water and we didn't know, you know, how long that gonna last. Either that or the food itself would run out. In the meantime, we tried to, you know, scan the horizon. Two things we had to avoid, the captain tell us. First, we tried to avoid all the communist boats, our ship, because during that time, you know, the communists still had its pack, you know, Poland, you know, East Germany, Soviet Union, you name it. So if those communist ships see us, they're going to pull us right back to Vietnam, and we're going to be in big trouble. In the meantime, we also realized there's pirates, because we learned that a lot of people you know, refugee got raped and, you know, taken by pirates, killed and all that. So we had to watch out for those boats too. Also, we try to look for some ship that can, you know, can save us, you know. And so when we try to avoid the communist ship, because we can see through a binocular a little bit, you know, certain flag, we try to avoid it. The next thing we know, we lost, you know, the directions, and we lost, you know, we went out, you know, we lost the, our route. And, you know, most of the captains and his helpers did not know the sea that well. So we ourselves survived the storm that night. And the fun thing was that when we were in the midst of that storm, Kate, there was Buddhists in there. There's Catholic too. So the Catholic, the quickest prayer we can pray is the Hail Mary, because it, by the time we pray the Our Father, that probably be the end of our life. So wow. We try to pray the Hail Mary. That's the shortest prayer. And the Buddhists pray their own prayer. And next thing we know that we were so scared, the Catholics start praying the Buddhist prayer and the Buddhists start praying the Hail Mary.
Wow.
So that was a funny moment, you know, looking back. So we survived that, and we're floating at sea, the heat, the wave. It's funny, we go to the beach right now, but if you're floating at sea with the you know, the sea water and the hot sun, you wish that you were not there. So we were baking like a, you know, like the fish. And then we ran out of water. And the next thing we know is that around us, there was a lot of shark. And we knew that, you know, some refugee was killed by shark before, because if our boat, you know, torn apart, that's what we faced. So we also realized that there's pirates. And so the captains told us that, hey, we, even though we are weak because no nourishments and, you know, seasick and all that, he tried to rally all the men and young men, our kids, our young boys, to put up a fight. You know, that was in theory. And we ran into, you know, quite a few pirate ships. And they ravaged us, you know, from, you know, from the first time to the last time, you know, women got raped and, you know, they beat us up and took everything. And so we were basically just floating at sea, and we didn't know, you know, what's next. The next thing we ran into was when you ran out of food, the only way we can do is that the idea of cannibalism came along. Now, for some of your audience who watched that movie Alive, you know, when I saw that movie, that also brought tears to my eyes, because, you know, the captain talked about that, and we just like, this is crazy. We, you know, we're not going to eat the dead, or we're not going to eat, you know, the neighbor that we just saw a moment ago. But when you had your face life and death experience, you either eat a dead corpse or you're going to die. And we had to prepare psychologically and mentally about that. And as a kid, you know, I was shocked. I just like, that is absolutely nuts.
Right.
But he prepared us for that. And when I saw that movie Alive and how they had to do that, boy, again, tears came down my eyes, because I said I was about to do the same thing. And of course, you know, thank God most of us was really sick and almost dying, but we, none of us was dead yet. But otherwise we would have to do the same thing, to stay alive. And so through that, that difficult, you know, another hurdle with, that whole idea, thank God, you know, toward the end of the week, we were able to see a ship from South Korea with the U.S. cargo on it. So that tanker basically, you know, surround us, you know, go around us for about, you know, three times. And that is a big ship going around a small ship. And we thought we're going to get tossed over. And I said, by the time we get rescued, we already sink down the ocean. So we thought our dinky little boat will tip over, or, you know, capsize. And so nothing happened, thank God. And they were able to, you know, lower down the rope ladder for us to climb up. And both of us were so weak that we almost thought we might fall over, you know, the side of the ship. But most of us, all of us, was able to rescue. And I saw that dinky little boat, you know, fading, you know, when we were on the tanker. And that was the moment of salvation that I able to, to see. But during, I mean, I forgot one thing that when I was in the boat during that storm of the night, I made a bargain with God, you know, just like a lot of people in the Bible. So I said, God, if you spare my life, I will try to, you know, be a good priest and, you know, serve you and God's people. And that was a deal I made, and God kept his bargain, his end, and I have kept my end and have been the priest for over 20 years now.
Wow. So we have a handful of minutes left. We could talk to you forever, and I'm sure the listeners are feeling the same way. But what's that been like making that transition? You had that life. You come to the United States. Now you're a priest, and you hear other mm-hmm. people's struggles, and you're able to relate some of what happened to you, I'm sure, in your homilies, too, and use that humor that you have that we heard at the beginning with your congregation. What's that journey been like for you?
Well, it's another chapter, Kate. It's full of challenges, you know, from the language barrier to the cultural difference to all kinds of other daily struggles, you know, difficulties. I remember just learning how to eat pizza, for example. I never, you know, most people here love pizza, so it took me, you know, quite a few years before I could eat pizza, you know.
Get him a pizza. We'll show him how to eat it.
But you know, now Kate, I live on pizza every day. I could live on that. But I think I could relate to people better with their struggles. What I go through give me a sense of compassion, a sense of understanding. I try to bring them, you know, the tool to help them overcome their struggles. So my story of struggle, difficulty, and despair, I can use that to relate to them. But at the end of my story, there's also a story of hope, redemption, and transformation. So there's the light at the end of the tunnel, and I myself able to help them see that. If I can make it through, then they themselves can rely on faith, on God, you know, on others, you know, to help them through. And so that basically my story in my book try to help people find resources, God's grace and God's help, and the people that God sent along the way to help them through their own struggles, their daily difficulties.
Wow. So we want to tell everyone to pick up the book so you can get all those stories in between, too. Living for a Higher Purpose, Story of a City Boy Who Survived the Vietnam War by Living for Jesus and Others. Father Vu, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate, and thank you, everyone, for giving me the opportunity to share my story. And I keep you all in my prayers, and let's try to live, you know, in God's grace and God's hope by helping one another. Thank you.
Thank you. Shot at in Mexico, 100 drinks at a well-worn bar with some shady-looking characters in Vegas, riding a bike from Dallas to Seattle on a bet, scribbling the words dungeon on a napkin while two passengers next to you on a plane wonder, what the heck does that mean? I'm Kate Delaney, and what does this have to do with my success, and why do you care? It's part of my journey that I want to share with you in my new book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Luckily now I can laugh at some of what seemed like utter disasters at the time. Can any of you relate? That's exactly what you'll discover by reading my book. I picture you on a boat, beach, or relaxing in the backyard, laughing out loud until you rupture your spleen. Well, hopefully not. While pulling out some seriously rare and secret stuff. Doesn't matter what you do or where you are right now, anyone in any walk of life can use what I learned in my years of crisscrossing around the United States pursuing my dreams. So what do you want to get out of life? Happiness? Contentment? Why are you here? Pick up my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, at Amazon.com.